What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Five Rounds. Today we are in our downtown studios, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Robin Black, John Ramdean with you. As we are looking back on the weekend that was, UFC 197 went down at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. The main event, John Jones returning to action, taking on OSP for the interim 205-pound championship. Should be John Jones' title, but he messed it up. And now he has to fight Daniel Cormier in the future for the undisputed championship. Took this fight on short notice opponent. He took getting ready for Daniel Cormier. Cormier injured himself. He said, hey, when you're fighting John Jones, you got to be aware that you got to be as close to 100% as possible. This is the best move for me. I'm bailing on the fight. In steps OSP. 3 weeks notice?
Yeah.
3 weeks notice? Yeah.
Boss.
And I know you've said that I've kind of been an OSP hater in the past. And I just have not been a fan of these athletes that have relied on their coaching and their athletic prowess to get through fights. Because I've seen it in the past where some of these athletes, as soon as they get hit, they go into a ball.
Ryan Bader is another example that you haven't always
Exactly. So OSP proved to me on Saturday night, though, he is cut from a different cloth. John Jones went to town on this guy for 25 minutes. Super creative, going high, going low. Picks him up, slammed him hard on his shoulder. Just a remarkable performance by John Jones. And just the idea that you're standing across the cage against the most dangerous fighter to ever compete at 205 pounds, arguably the greatest fighter in the history of the sport, and just keep zapping you, kicking you to the body, to the head, picking you up, slamming you down, smashing up your legs. And OSP felt, it seemed like he was frozen, but his mental strength willed him to try to move forward and land his punches on John Jones. Really great stuff in the main event.
Yeah, so they said that, I think there's now an x-ray that he broke his arm.
Yeah.
Imagine, so that was early. Your arm is broken, so imagine that. And when you hit that slam, like everything, every time you get shook, every time you get hit in the body, that broken arm, like that's incredible toughness, incredible mental toughness too. There's that thing when you watch fights, we can't feel what it feels like. But every one of those shots is brutal. And that when you stomp down on that big leg.
Oh, my God.
Man, I mean, the amount of abuse that these fighters take that we can't fathom it. But I know if we all imagine somebody taking a baseball bat and smashing us on the leg, just picture that in your mind. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh God,
that would be terrible.
Now, like 20 of those or 30 of those in front of everybody for 25 minutes. Body, legs, baseball bats.
But I think one of the reasons why, and we'll talk about this fight later on, the lightweight matchup between Anthony Pettis and Edson Barboza, and OSP, is that these guys are able to move forward after it. If it was anybody in there, if I was to get kicked, just one kick to the body by John Jones, a hard leg kick, and he kicks me in the head, you would obviously be able to tell that I had endured trauma because I'd be shelled up. I'd be limping. I certainly would not be moving forward towards this entity. And somehow OSP managed to suck it up and still managed to try to find opportunities to score on John Jones.
You know, I know that I get almost fervorish about fighting. And I get frustrated sometimes. Yeah. And sometimes I get frustrated. You know, like, why can't people see things? Why aren't the proper stories being told? But if you just think of what each one of these fights really is in that context, what they're overcoming, you appreciate it so much more. You know, once we get to a point where, like, how was that fight? Ah, that one stunk. No.
Didn't Chael Sonnen say that John Jones' performance was garbage?
Yeah, he did. Chael can do whatever Chael wants. He's funny.
Playing the
he's
game.
Brilliant.
He's joking around.
Of course he is. He's brilliant, Chael Sonnen. And I think I know him a little bit, and he's hilarious and very smart, very giving guy, very good person. And I think he and us view our jobs very differently. Like, we're hoping that if you could learn something, some neat little nugget, and put it in there, and people can add it to their collection of what they know about fighting, that they'll like fighting.
And the sport grows that way.
And that's what we think the job is. Chael, he knows his job is to entertain you.
Right.
That is his job. And he does it I'm not supposed to swear.
Oh, this is supposed to be a PG version.
I know. He'll beep that. We do this on television. A lot of people watch this on the internet.
Yeah.
But we do this on like television, and we sometimes swear. So we're trying not to do that now.
It's passion.
I know. It's true. But when we look at these fights, and you look, if you can just contextualize that, it's like, think of how much each of these shots really severely hurts these athletes, and then ask them to keep coming forward. Like Pettis, that Pettis fight, we'll talk about it later for sure, but the amount of damage he had to take and still keep trying to find ways, you have to, if you can keep that in your mind when you watch these fights, you appreciate them all the more.
Yeah, but again, getting back to the Anthony Pettis fight, it's difficult for me to understand that, because there's no way I would ever be in a situation where I'm fighting another high-level athlete in a sports environment. And just his ability to suck up the pain, and not just that, to physically overload his brain to make his body do, because again, the amount of damage he took to the inside of that leg would have to affect his mobility, and I would imagine that he would feel it every time he moves, but yet he has to force his brain to make Edson Barbosa believe that these kicks do not hurt as much as you believe that they do, at the same time avoid the ones that he's trying to land moving forward and try to create openings on this severely damaged leg.
It is crazy. Yeah, if you just take your leg, give it now. If you have no pants on,
yeah, it's worse.
But just do that to yourself.
Yeah.
Not too hard.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, oh my God, there's a lot of nerves there. It's a very tender area. Yeah, those, and OSP, same thing. He had to keep moving forward. And it's just that thing, that understanding, and we've used this analogy many, many times, but you touch a burning hot element, the natural thing is, I don't want to do that. That's in us. That's in who we are. That's why our species has survived.
Yeah.
We move away from pain. These people, all night long, they move towards it. And that just that thing is so incredibly impressive that you need to keep that in your mind when you watch fights. Because if you just make them robots, if you just make them video game characters and you don't think of pain or fear or trauma or any of those things, you can just move these things around and they punch and kick.
But people do. People do. When they watch basketball players or they watch hockey players, they're superstars. These are superheroes to regular people because they dedicate their time and energy to be able to absorb this punishment, to deal with the trauma moving forward. But that still doesn't give people the understanding of, yes, even though they're prepared for it. We've talked to so many fighters and trainers, and it's like Misha Tate, we had her in studio, and she said, I've had a bunch of fights, and each fight is different. Yeah. You learn, you know, sure, you can take certain lessons into the next fight, but everyone, you're learning something completely new, and I'm sure OSP learned a lot from that.
I'm sure he did. And they're all, and she's 100% right, obviously. She knows exactly what she's talking about from a first-person perspective. We can't ever know that. I had some low-level fights. I don't know anything about what they're going through. There's no carryover from my low-level. There's a little carryover. There's a little. It raises some questions. I know that a fight with Edson Barbosa has no comparison to the lower level fights that I had. And then people do jiu-jitsu and do jiu-jitsu tournaments, and there's no real carryover. Somebody's had an amateur boxing or they got in a fight in a bar once. It's something so much more extreme than that. And so if we keep that in our mind, we appreciate the fight so much more. You talk about them each being different. John Jones would have been in a different fight with Cormier. There would have been no similarities. So, yes, you look and go, oh man, if that was Cormier, it would have been a different night. It would have been a different fight. Everything would have been different. His focus, the way he prepared, the way he looked at it, the way what he saw that fight as, who he was, everything changes if it was Cormier in there.
I think one of the reasons why is I look at John Jones, you have an assignment. The assignment is, no matter how you slice it, everybody that comes up to John Jones says, oh man, you're the greatest fighter of all time. Your peers tell you that you're the greatest of all time. You go on, check media, John Jones, greatest of all time. So somehow you got to manage to deal with that hype. It's like, okay, I'm the man. So now you're at the top of the mountain. You were the champion. All this stuff happens. You make your return after 15 months. You had a certain assignment. That's not the assignment for the time being, A, you want to go get this fight under your belt. Because the goal, the bigger goal is I've got Daniel Cormier. I think most people recognize that Ovince St. Preux wasn't the top challenge for John Jones. Yes, it was an interesting challenge because of his athleticism, his size, his awkward style, and so on and so forth. But John Jones, assignment one, protect your head. Make sure that you come out of this fight as unscathed as humanly possible, considering you're going 25 minutes with an elite athlete. Number two, you got to win this fight.
Yeah.
And number three, use this as a warm-up. Get comfortable inside of the cage. Yeah. And I think that's what we saw. We saw John Jones trying his best to take out OSP throughout this fight. He tried many times. Like, I'm going to try my best to take this guy out. But if it doesn't come, it doesn't come. I'm going to try.
But I'm not going to over-try.
Over-try.
That's how, that's how OSP was going to win that fight, is if you got overly aggressive. Yeah. You were going to give him opportunities to hit you. If you stay outside and make him chase in, kick him, kick him, kick him, kick his body, kick his legs, kick his arms, kick him. Then he's got to come in. When he comes in, you either move back out and keep kicking him or move in and start elbowing him. There's a weird simplicity to this John Jones game and Demetrius, too. They just bring the fight into different places than you think the fight is in.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking more about UFC 197 as two of the pound-for-pound best fighters ever were in action. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdean and Black with you discussing UFC 197. John Jones, not takes out, but lays a beating on OSP. Again, I was a huge fan of OSP's performance after Saturday night because we saw, you know, true heart and a guy that was unwilling to break, even though John Jones smashed him apart, broke his arm, took him down. The slams that landed him hard on his shoulder. Again, certainly a lesson that OSP will use moving forward. But John Jones, I know we've had this discussion, who is the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world, and what was the biggest positive that you took away from the John Jones fight?
Just how smart he was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you look at it. So round four was when the first, if you go back and watch round four, the first minute and a half is the best minute and a half that OSP has. Pushes it. He pushes
it. Where he lands the huge right hand.
I think the huge one was earlier, round two maybe.
Okay.
But he has some great moments because he's pushing it. And what happens? Jones takes him down and elbows him in. And that was going to happen. So OSP's kind of staying out of distance. He just didn't want to be on his back.
Yeah.
But after losing three rounds, he had to get a little more aggressive, which resulted in him being on his back. And if you do watch round four, you'll look at the end, and Jones is over him, and he's just the buzzer goes, and OSP's face, like that moment is the terror of fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a proud and courageous man who still experienced that. Just look at his eyes. It's like, because you see John Jones and how big he must look from your back.
And the damage he's already inflicted on you.
Yeah, it's a crazy moment. And then comes back, fights his heart out in round five. It's a beautiful thing. Fighting is a beautiful thing. I got into a small argument with a friend of a friend who was trying to troll me in a conversation into saying, well, this violence is bad for society and it's just this. And I was trying to explain to him how combat can be beautiful, and that if we look at it that way and if we see it, we will demystify the violence or the negativity if you look at it different. These are not angry people. Jones can seem a little angry at times.
Yeah, especially if you saw that interview with Megan O'Leary afterwards, and she said that OSP had broken his arm, and John Jones gives a little dance saying, I'm glad I broke this guy's arm.
He's authentic.
Sure.
That's what I like about him now. That's why I think people seem attracted to him. He's being who he is.
Sure.
He's not putting on an
accent. That's not right.
It's freaky, man.
I mean, like,
that's freaky.
You ask Damian Maia and you say, you know, you broke your opponent's arm. He'd be like, that's the last thing I wanted to do. He's got a family to provide for. Now he's going to be out for six or 7 months.
True.
Don't fighters know what happens if you just break somebody's arm?
Yeah, they do, but he never thought of him in that moment as a human. He thought of him as that was a result of something he did. And so, but he's authentic. I mean, I'm not going to judge him. That's who he is. But it's weird. I mean, I don't want to break anybody's arm. In fact, I'd feel bad. Yeah, I think a lot of people would, but not everybody. Everybody's different, you know? Cormier seems to have chilled on the, you know, being too concerned with how people view him and Jones, which I think you got to let that go. Like, he's not making you a better fighter, you know, that emotion. And the only things that you that are important to have are the things that are going to make you better at your
right,
job.
Right. Now, I'm sure Cormier is going to be mentally focused. I just hope that he's objective and he doesn't look at that performance that Jones had and said and think to himself, "Oh, if I was in there, I'd be licking my chops." Because as you pointed out, John Jones wouldn't have fought the same fight.
No. He wouldn't have been the same guy. He wouldn't have had the same thoughts. He wouldn't have done anything the same. But it's a very easy thing to get clicks or to, you know, sell your website or whatever to say that. And I often have criticized, why aren't we talking about the real truths in certain things? But who cares? You wake up on a Monday morning and go, if people are talking about fighting, that's good. It's going to be an ongoing conversation for decades. Yeah. And if you're hoping that some of
It's just there's a conversation. Yeah, as long as there's any conversation going on.
This is a beautiful thing. It is a wonderful thing, fighting. And you want people talking about it, but hopefully we get people to see its beauty. But if you like fighting because you like violence, that's okay too. Yeah. Do you know? But Jones is a weird one, but he is who he is.
I will tell you though, the co-main event, when you saw Demetrius Johnson and what he's capable of, especially against a high-level athlete like Henry Cejudo, for him to just, you know, even after getting taken down, for him to, his confidence didn't waver one bit. I got taken down. This is what happens in MMA. Mm-hmm. This guy's not going to be able to hold me down. And as soon as he had opportunities, he inflicted damage to the body. There was angles. It was hard to understand whose clinch game was better, John Jones's or Demetrius Johnson. Just both so destructive. Yeah.
And so different.
Yeah.
You know, Demetrius is just so textbook. Like, if there was a book written, this would be the best way to execute this thing. It's just you just
what he
take
does
pictures
it.
Of him. Whereas Jones just makes stuff up.
Yeah.
He's got such good understanding, like almost natural understanding of he was put on earth to do this.
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
This is what this guy does. This is what this animal is. He's a fighting machine. Both of these two are. It was really cool to see them both on the same card and get to see how different they were. I did a breakdown of John Jones versus Daniel Cormier, their first fight, and the setup of the next fight. And honestly, it's the best. I think it's the best breakdown I've ever done. So I'm just really glad he won. And that fight's back now. And that fight's back. I can repurpose it because it took like 19 or 20 days to build the edit of that.
Right.
So that's still there. I'll just have to shoot it again with a new date. And then, you know. And so I'm excited for people to see that because their first fight really is a classic.
Oh, and you know that their second fight, like the Rory McDonald-Robbie Lawler fight, because they knew each other the first time, it's like, okay, these are the adjustments that I have to make, and hopefully we get to see something closer to that Robbie Lawler-Rory McDonald 2 fight than the however, I love the first fight with Cormier and Jones. I just expect to see something different the second time.
I remember you asked Chris Weidman a great question about being prepared to be taken to places that you've never been.
Yeah.
Which Rory obviously was prepared for that.
Yeah.
And Weidman said, yeah, he's always prepared for that. In a weird kind of way, I don't know if he said this exactly, but you got the feeling that he wants that. Mm-hmm. He wants to be taken to the extremes of performance. And I think Cormier and Jones better be ready to do that because I think they're going to both take each other there.
Demetrius Johnson, people are just, they're sold on him. They're like, okay, but now what? Because we need somebody to sell across the cage. You know, we all know that Demetrius Johnson's really good, but there's no rivalries. Yeah. There's no storylines. He's essentially beaten up everybody in the top 10. You and I were talking about Zach Makovsky and maybe Formiga and Wilson Hayes, but those aren't huge, huge fights. And I mean, I don't think Demetrius Johnson cares. I mean, Matt Hume has talked to Dana White and he said, what do we need to do? Just keep winning. Yeah, just keep doing your thing. And my job is Demetrius Johnson. I go hang out with Matt. I train. I learn some tools. The UFC fact gives me a fax. Do those exist anymore?
Yeah,
faxes?
So.
Oh, okay. This is who I'm fighting on this date. Yeah. Call Matt. Get ready. Fight. Do my stuff with Twitch. Play some video games. Hang
good,
with my
man.
Wife and kids.
He's killing it.
I don't have to worry about anything else. However, everybody else needs him to be challenged. Yeah. They need him to go up to 135 pounds. They need a big 35er to come down to 25 pounds. They need something interesting for Demetrius Johnson. People, what are you looking for? The guy just manhandled Henry Cejudo.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's I think that's his, what, his fourth or fifth stoppage in six or seven fights. Yeah. People say, well, this guy's dull. He always goes the distance. Chase is giving us the wrap-up sign. We're going to take another break. We come back, we're talking more about Demetrius Johnson and what the future holds for the champ. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. We're chatting about UFC 197 that went down Saturday night at the MGM Grand. John Jones defeats OSP by unanimous decision. Demetrius Johnson in the co-featured bout looking to retain his 125-pound strap. Takes out Henry Cejudo at 249 of round one. And Demetrius Johnson said it afterwards. I am the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. And it's a question that everybody asks. It's so subjective. What, in your opinion, makes the pound-for-pound best fighter?
I think it's
clean just, technique.
Yeah, I mean, if it's clean technique, if it's perfect technique, then it's him.
Okay,
because there's no comparison. His technique, Jones does, is very feel oriented, which is brilliant.
Which is brilliant.
Brilliant. He's textbook, and they're very different.
Yeah.
But I feel like the pound for pound conversation is a mechanism to create discussion.
Yep.
Like we were saying, I shouldn't worry about what people are talking about. I should worry that they're talking about the thing that I love, you know? And pound for pound discussions are that. I think it's just a mechanism to be able to go, okay, well, since nobody's beating Demetrius Johnson for a while, we have to have some other thing. Because if we say, how's Demetrius Johnson do against, and you list every single 125-pounder in the world, and he wins them. So we need to come up with something else to discuss.
Yeah.
Well, what if him and John Jones were the same size? You know, I think if it comes down to the perfect technique and perfect execution, Matt told us he was trying to create perfection.
Yep.
They're seeking perfection. I said, but you can't achieve perfection. He said, I know, but you have to try. And in trying, wherever you get to will never be perfect, but wherever it is, in the path for perfection, you get somewhere great.
Well, it's perfect for them.
Yeah, perfect for right now. The thing that I always imagine is in 2025, what will fighting look like? It'll look different. In 2025, Demetrius Johnson right now, would that be enough?
Well, will it look different to the naked eye? When people tune in 2025, are they going to be able to process more than takedowns and punches and kicks? Like, what else is going to be there for people? Is it patterns? Is it new techniques? Is it just the way that people's body look? The way their movement is? Is it all of the
it's
above?
Probably all of those things. And if you think about some of the simple ideas, I'm going to pretend to throw a right hand, and if you block, and maybe it'll freeze you a moment enough that I can get a takedown on you. Or if I go and I make you react to a takedown, maybe that'll open up a punch. Take that giant concept and make millions of subtle threats like that. And then while I've got you thinking, now I got you thinking about up and down. Okay, I got you thinking about up and down. Let's play with distance and up and down. And let's play with up and down, make you think about up and down and distance and come in on different angles. Now your brain is processing all of these things. There's a lot going on, say, when Demetrius Johnson fights or Barbosa versus Pettis. There was a lot of that going on. Guys can do more of it now. Their brains can handle more. And so who knows where they'll be able to go, you know, 10 years from now, how much the brain will be able to handle and push and try. It'll be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating right now to see Demetrius Johnson because I really believe at this stage, since that loss to Ian McCall, the first time they faced off.
It was a draw.
It was a draw.
Yeah.
What did I say, a loss?
Loss.
Sorry, a draw. He lost to Dominic Cruz right before that. His only other loss, Brad Pickett. Lost to Dominic Cruz, would face off Ian McCall. It was a draw, and then he would win his next 10 fights in a row. Ian McCall, Joseph Benavidez, John Dodson, Moraga, Ali Bogatinov, Chris Carriasso, Horiguchi. And again, there's rematches in there as well. And now Henry Cejudo. You're trying to think to yourself, well, he continues to get better. Who's going to push him? Don't you need a willing dance partner, a good enough dance partner to force you to be a better fighter?
I don't think they think that. And, like, they are just trying to achieve perfection. The other person is incidental to their journey. It's just another thing that they have to do. He's trying to create what perfect martial arts is. But perfect martial arts is only perfect for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know where it'll go. I think that Demetrius' understanding of the angles at which he's attacking, there's just so much going on that, you know, we could do 20 different breakdowns all at once on the same fight. How he played with how he played with the feet, how he made him think about something different. All of it is going on simultaneously with him. You can stop and point out or analyze or discuss or dive into any one aspect of Demetrius Johnson at any time, but there's others going on. Well, so you can't tell the whole story. He's so complicated.
And what about the idea? Because he said, there's no game plan. I just go in and try to fight the Demetrius Johnson style of fight. I don't care what you're doing. I'm just going to use all the things that you pointed out. I have these at my disposal. I have a great coach. Now it's time for me to go and execute. And he just waits for openings. I'll do these things. If something presents itself, I'll deal with that. If not, I'll do some other stuff until something presents itself.
As simple as the statement that you just made could sound, I think it's exactly true. We go and we test this thing. We go, oh, how's he responding to my off-time movement? Oh, he's not responding well. Cool. I'm going to do that. Oh, and how is he responding as I add an angle and force him to pivot? Oh, not well. Oh, this is going to get easier. And he handled my threat of my takedown very well. Cool. How can I make that a bad thing for him?
Right.
Like, he's just going to take and, you know, put a few chips in, see how it works. Oh, cool. He's terrible here. Oh, he doesn't have anything for me in the tie clinch. Oh, we got it. You know, and if he did, then we'll go out and try something else. Or maybe he won't if I add the threat of the takedown. You know, and he just keeps adding all those things, and he's getting better all the time.
We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk about if this is a conscious thing. Is Demetrius Johnson actually thinking, or is he reacting during the conflict when 5 rounds today continues? Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you discussing UFC 197. John Jones getting the win. Demetrius Johnson getting the win, taking out Henry Cejudo in impressive fashion. And before the break, we were talking about the choices Demetrius Johnson makes inside of the cage that he said after the fight, there's no strategy. There's no game plan. I go in, I'm prepared for everything. Just like we talked about when we talked to Chris Weidman, he goes, I know the positions. My goal is to go and win every single position. It seems to be the case for Demetrius Johnson. Is he actually thinking about stuff when he's inside of the cage, or is it just so many reps that he recognizes when you're doing things poorly or reacting poorly to the things that he does, and then he is able to initiate a plan of attack, so to speak?
You know what is an exciting answer is that I don't know. And that's cool.
Yeah.
You know? How could you really
nerdy.
Know? Yeah. Yeah. But it's exciting.
It is exciting.
It's exciting to have new big questions. And the better that these fighters get, you have to have new questions. Because who the hell are we if we think we know the answers? Mm-hmm. Because
didn't you talk to Demetrius and you asked him a certain thing? He's like, I don't know, man. I just listen to Matt and he tells me what to do.
What he's doing, in whatever way it's programmed for him to express it, he actually can't quite describe it to you.
He knows it when he sees it.
He knows it when he does it.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, and I try this, and then this happens. And it's like Matt has programmed him with so much martial arts, so many options, that I think it's key. One thing I do know is that he is in a flow state.
Yeah.
100% of his fights,
like
he's been
right
able
away
to achieve that. And in that type of flow state, the reason it's hard to describe is because, and everybody's felt it. Almost everybody ever played that game of floor hockey, and everything
in the zone.
They called it in the zone or on fire.
Yeah.
But it's a real state. It's a biochemical state that the best can get into. Now he is in that. And when he is, the way they describe it is somewhere between improvisation and thinking. It's some other thing.
Can you be in that state 24 hours a day?
And I don't think so, but humans are able to get into it more and quicker and achieve it at a higher level than they ever have in human history, at least in this level of modern human history. They might have been people in that when they're building the pyramids. Right. You know what I mean? When things have been happening that seems
stuff that needs to get done.
Exactly. Some level of superhuman accomplishment. Sometimes there's the ability to do that. But it's a real state. It's a biochemical state. And in it, if you ask the person, they might say, yeah, you know, I was free to think out there. Other guys will say, I'm just doing. I'm not even thinking. So the truth of the answer to that is we don't really know. And even when John Jones will tell you, or Condit, I think, is very aware of, of what that state is like for him. But the very best are in it. And there's a book – I talked about it on Rogan's podcast. People ask me about it a lot since then. Joe, cheers. I have no coffee left. It's called The Rise of Superman. And this guy has gone to look at this state. And it's easy to research in extreme sports, people who flip motorcycles 20 times. Because if they leave that state and aren't in the state to be able to do it, they'll die probably.
Yeah.
Free climbers find themselves – and you used to be able to access it for certain limited lengths of time. And we've just had breakthroughs, humans in seeing each other do it. Guys will climb for 10 hours now, free climbing.
Yeah.
If you lose, and when you talk to them about it, they'll say they just feel the mountain. They go up and there's the handle and a poop, and it feels like this path has always been there. And so if you read up on that thinking, I think Demetrius Johnson, it's the same. That path has always kind of been there. It's very available to him. It's very obvious to him. To us, we're like, how did you do that? And he's like, well, that's just what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the combination of programming, the fact that he and Matt Hume have literally researched what is the best way to fight in modern martial arts, and his ability to be in the flow state. And when you're not in that state, you can see the best be destroyed one night. And suddenly you're like, oh, my God, why did he lose, or how did this happen?
Mm-hmm.
If they fail to achieve this state of freedom, even the best will fall.
What it feels like a lot of the time is that one fighter manages to get into the mm-hmm. flow state and the opponent can't get into that.
Yeah.
We saw it with OSP and John Jones. We saw it with Demetrius Johnson. However, we did see it with Edson Barboza and Anthony Pettis. Both guys seem to be in that flow state. And what we get out of it, and I know a lot of people are, you know, it's like, well, we need to know who wins, who loses, and who's going up the ranks. I'll tell you, I don't need to know those things.
Yeah.
All I need to know is that when I see Edson Barboza and Anthony Pettis dance inside of the octagon, that they deliver what they delivered on Saturday night. We got to see remarkable striking abilities and movement and angles and creativity and toughness and durability and focus. And we really got to see everything imaginable. Okay, there weren't takedowns or there wasn't ground control, but I think this is the fight that most people anticipate when they think of stand-up mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts, kickboxing, full display in that lightweight contest. Beautiful to watch.
It really was. It really was. But I'll bet you, if you talk to Anthony, he will say he didn't quite feel like he was there. You know, now, and people's reaction might then be always making excuses.
What if he won?
If he won and said, I just didn't feel like I was quite there, I think that would be interesting. I think people can win. Jones may not have accessed it the way he normally does.
But can you – do you have to? Do you have to access – is that a complete thing? It's like, oh, I was completely free. Or is it like I had moments of freedom in there, but –
Well, yeah, I think you have to be ready for the fact that you might not be at your best and still find a way to win, and we see that all the time. But Anthony Pettis, I believe, was not quite at his best, and he hasn't been for a while. You know, I swore in block one.
Yeah.
I was thinking, don't swear, don't swear, don't swear, right? That's what happens. Anthony, for his last couple of fights, was thinking, don't get taken down, don't get taken down, don't get taken down. He was thinking a negative. And this one, he didn't get taken down, but he didn't quite open it up. And now, at the same time, Barbosa was magical. He was wonderful. He was brilliant. So even if Anthony was at his best, but, you know, this is still – understanding these types of states is still very much a work in progress because you can smash a guy out of it. He can be – it's not an either or. It's not a certainty. And if you're not at your best, you still have to find a way to win.
So you can start in that flow state where you're like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah. And then something during the fight can change that.
Yes. And you can start rough and not have a great first round. You see some people just get into it in the second. So not everybody is able to do it 100% of the time. It's very understood. Mental coaching, sports psychologists, that's one of their primary goals is to get you into a great state of performance in the fight and in your training and everything leading up to it. But that is the key to a lot of – I mean, and in certain cases too, when you saw the comfort of Conor McGregor and the discomfort of Aldo, some – it's not always we're both going to get it. But when the two guys do access it, those are the best fights.
Yeah.
I mean, Rory and Robbie right down
– Rockhold and Weidman.
Yeah, that's going to be an amazing fight again.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed this fight. And I think, you know, we all watch fights for different reasons. And I think to myself, if I have a first all-star team, okay, I want, again, you. What is the reason you watch fights? Do you watch it for, okay, how is somebody going to best another trained combatant? Or do you watch it to see crazy stuff? Are you hoping to see creativity? Or do you just watch saying, you know what, even though I know, I don't know what I'm going to see?
The more you learn, the more you should realize how little you know. And that is the beauty of studying anything. And for me, I think I'm just deeply curious about all of it, about fighting, about training, about the top-level guys, where it's going to go. There's an answer. We got it. This is how you win. And then somebody makes that wrong. That all of that over years, all of that happening. I mean, Demetrius Johnson cannot be beat. Or can he?
Mm-hmm.
Can he? And if we were to beat him, how could we beat him? Who do we have? Zach Makovsky is very talented. He puts it together really well. He's got some of the things Cejudo had and some things way better than him. And he's got Faraz, and he's got an idea, and he's got, you know, could this do it? Like, that's – the answer right now is no, but could – he's still young. He's one of the few, I think, that could do it. Every division has somebody like that. And then sometimes you're like, you think you know everything about a fighter. This is who he is. And he comes out, and he's nothing like that. That's – all of that stuff is awesome.
We're going to take another time out. When we come back, we're talking more about UFC 197 as well as the Bellator card that went down on Friday night. Man – was there a shocking turn of events in the main event? Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. Before the break, we were talking about why we watch fights. And you're saying you're obviously looking for truths and seeing what the training regimen is and the new trends and how the evolution of the sport. One of the reasons why I watch mixed martial arts or boxing, wrestling, whatever it is to see action, to see athletes, individuals that do something that 99% of the people on the planet would never get themselves involved in. So when I look at who are the best guys for that, I think about like an all-star team. And if you look at the different divisions, who would I put in my all-star team? Who is the guy that I can count on every single time? And Anthony Pettis, in my opinion, is first team all-star because the guy knows how to win. The guy knows technique. The guy knows how to execute. And he knows how to entertain, and he can take a beating. So when I look at Anthony Pettis, I don't care if he wins or loses. I know he does.
Yeah, of course he does.
But based on his history and his body of work, the stuff that he delivers to the fans, to the audience, that to me is why I tune in. You know, you could have – I could have turned the channel right before they announced the decision. Granted, I kind of knew what the decision was going to be. I felt that Barbosa won the first round and the third round. I did give the second round to Anthony Pettis. However, it was very, very close fight. The first round was very close. The second round was very, very close. Did you give it to Barboza?
I rewatched it this morning, and I literally was like, I don't know who won. Either way.
So it makes me feel fine that I'm giving it to Anthony Pettis because Barboza won the fight, but Pettis deserves some credit in there. Yeah. And round two was it. Do you look at it that way? Do you have a first, an all-star team?
Yeah, I do.
25, DJ.
Yeah.
35, Dominic Cruz. Yeah.
45 is Cub Swanson.
Cub Swanson.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Connor. Connor's a pretty special combat athlete. And so he's definitely up there. And I really enjoy watching him do that.
70. Who's your 70-pound all-star? Is it Carlos Condit?
Yeah.
Definitely. Over Robbie Lawler?
Yes, 100%.
That's your guy?
Carlos Condit.
85, Weidman or Rockhold or somebody else?
Weidman, I think.
Weidman's my guy. And light heavyweight, is John Jones your guy?
Yeah. There are other fighters that I, you know, hey, man, Chuck Liddell is the greatest fighter ever.
Sure, but I mean, current roster, yeah. And heavyweight Stipe is your guy.
Yeah,
is that your guy?
Yeah. Because I've been studying him so much. It's one of those ones when people were talking about Cejudo, they're like, is it too soon? And my answer to it was, he might as well do it because in 4 years, can he get 4 years better? Yeah, but Demetrius Johnson will get even better. So you might as well do it. With Stipe, it's like he's still getting better. He has a lot he can still acquire of skills and knowledge. So it's like, would he be better to have fought in a year? Is Verdum a completed project?
Yeah.
And Stipe is still incomplete? I don't know the answer to that. But having said that, when you watch Stipe, there's some really, really cool things that he does that you don't see heavyweights do.
When you look at your all-star list, is there somebody? Is there some common trait between all those fighters?
Well, Condit, Weidman, Swanson, and or Connor. Who did we say at 35?
Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, and Demetrius. Yeah, they're all super flowy. They're all super, super flowy. And smooth, and they're mobile, and they're fluid, you know. So ultimately, I guess, aesthetically, that's what I enjoy the most.
Yeah.
Just to watch from a pure enjoyment standpoint. They also all push the action. But I love watching any kind of fights because when I see Ryan Bader take a guy down and crush him on the ground, that impresses me.
Yeah.
Although Korshkov, speaking of 170s.
Holy smokes. Geez. Yeah, we talked about it before the break that we're going to talk about this Bellator card. And if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor, because I know there's a lot of people out there that say, those Bellator guys, they're second rate. There's no way they could hang with the UFC guys. There are good fighters all over the world. There's good fighters that are from Russia and from Poland and from Brazil and from England and from Trinidad and Tobago. Okay, I'm not sure about Trinidad and Tobago, but I'm sure there's somebody there. Canada. But the fact is, we saw Ben Henderson, a former UFC champion, in his Bellator debut, get smoked by Andre Korshkov. Ben Henderson is so ridiculously tough. Those flying knees that landed.
Spinning hook kicks.
Outrageous. How he survived, and I heard Cody talked about it, that he wouldn't be surprised if this was a 43-50 in terms of scoring because two rounds being a 10-8 round. Just a crazy, crazy, crazy night.
So Korshkov is an unbelievably good fighter.
Yeah.
And if we didn't know that before, we do know that now. And he fought, he did a few things so well that they couldn't be stopped. The way he fought the southpaw, just his southpaw versus a southpaw thinking, using his right kick. He had Henderson forced to pick either side, neither one, which was good. So there was like no proper lateral movement choice for Ben Henderson. Anywhere he went, he was getting
danger.
You have to go forward, which that thing we were talking about.
Yeah.
But this guy's using range so well, and he's immense. And the size thing, it matters. Of course it matters. That's why there's weight classes. But it is not the only thing. It is just one thing that was part of that brilliant performance. When you are the smaller man, you must be faster. You must be technically better. You must be a better fighter. And Ben Henderson was not a better fighter.
Yeah.
He was either an equal to or lesser than fighter, and the other guy had a size advantage.
I mean, Andre Koroshkov, it felt his confidence was through the roof. His speed, his power, his conditioning, his offensive mindset was all designed to destroy this former UFC champion. People don't know who you are. Well, they're going to know when I smoke this former UFC champion. That didn't Ben Henderson beat Nate Diaz?
Yeah.
So the guy that just choked out Conor McGregor, I'm going to smoke this guy. And holy cow. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up on this week's edition of Five Rounds. Good for you, Andre Koroshkov. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. If you are in Canada, I'm sorry, world, this Sunday night at 9 p.m., we are pleased to present UFC 184, Ronda Rousey taking on Kat Zingano. And we can't wait for the return of Ronda Rousey. Yeah. We love her. Very, very aggressive, very fun to watch. And we know that she's going to come back stronger than ever. Before the break, we were talking about Andre Koroshkov getting the job done against Ben Henderson, just dominating. Smooth, and I think Ben Henderson said he's going to the army now.
Yeah,
I'll get it. Well, if you want somebody defending your country, Ben Henderson's the guy. But we also saw Pitbull Freite getting the job done.
I think he was injured too. I think he was injured in that fight. I did see that one. I only
Pitbull.
Saw, yeah. And he fought a
super exciting. Yeah. Very, very crazy stuff. Cyborg Santos getting the job done over Brennan Ward. I was freaking out. You like to see these old school guys, you know, that have been around.
And that was an old school move. The rolling knee bar to set up. Like, that's so old school.
What's on the horizon? Is there anything you're thinking about? We have this huge show coming down in Brazil, UFC 198, one of the most loaded cards you're ever going to get. Damian Maia, Matt Brown, the heavyweight championship of the world on the line. Stipe, Fabrizio Verdum, Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall. Other cyborg on the card as well. What else is on that card? Just
insanity. Yeah.
Just some of the biggest names, I think, in Brazil's history. Vitor Belfort, Jacare on the card. Bonkers is the only way to explain it.
I'm doing a breakdown on Stipe versus Verdum this week, midweek. I'm going to shoot that. I got to write it. We've built the edit, and I got to write. You know, you look at that one, Verdum, he's one of these few guys when you say, don't go to the floor with him.
Yeah.
It's actually like the fight can end if you go to the floor with him, so do not do that.
Yeah.
But he knows that you're not going to, and it allows him to strike with impunity, which means Stipe has to outstrike him while still defending takedowns, and he only has to outstrike you while going, sure, take me down, I'll submit you. So it's an unfair game that he's created through having such an amazing guard, and it's brilliant. It's really brilliant.
UFC 198 going down May 14th from Curitiba, Brazil, the heavyweight championship, Jacare, Vitor, Damian Maia, Matt Brown, Anderson Silva, Mauricio Shogun Hua, Little Nog versus Pat Cummins, Thiago Santos versus Nate Marquardt. The list goes on and on. That is it for us. We gotta go. He's Robin Black. I'm John Ramdin. Chase Kaiser running the board. We'll see you guys next week on Five Rounds Today.